Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Soho Insider Podcast. My name is Saad Usmani. I'm the chief of the myeloma service at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, and I'm joined here by my colleague, I would say esteemed colleague, Dr. Gwen Nichols, who now serves as the CMO of Leukemia Lymphoma Society. And we're going to talk about all the wonderful advances that we've made, strides that we've made in hematologic malignancies, and just see what the future direction looks like. Gwen, welcome.
Well, thank you, Sal, and happy to talk about what's happening in the blood cancer space. I really believe that blood cancers are sort of a bellwether for how the field of oncology and cancer is advancing. We do a lot of the research, even if we aren't the majority of the cancers. And some of the advances are really, really exciting. There are two that I am thinking of in particular. I think we've all heard about CAR T cell therapy. The expansion of CAR T cell therapy, not only with new targets, and obviously your area of expertise, myeloma, has had an amazing a number of advances in terms of how to use CAR T in conjunction with the other therapies that we have for myeloma now. Very different than when I was at Sloan Kettering, and we only had a very few choices for patients with myeloma. So really, really exciting. The other thing about CAR T cell therapy that I think people may not know about is that, especially in the pediatric world, it's being tested in other solid tumors. And there was a very exciting recent publication from Texas Children's showing long-term survival of neuroblastoma patients, children with neuroblastoma, with long-term survival using CAR T. That, for me, is really a positive and tells me that when we figure out the right way to use immunotherapy, it will expand, and it may not be CAR T. CAR T may just be generation one, but I think it's really exciting that it looks like we are curing not only children with ALL, but now other diseases. And I think it's a very big positive for the field in general.
No, I completely share your enthusiasm and that forward-looking thinking. This is just the beginning, and you rightly said, we start with these smaller experiences and trials and error in blood cancers. And if you look at the history of cancer medicine, this is where it all started too.
Yeah.
I think we learn a lot, and then we are able to extrapolate that to other areas. It's happening in the solid space in adults as well. Cellular therapies are being tried in clinical trials for solid tumors, for lung,
brain tumors.
Brain tumors, for sarcomas, even, I think there are a lot of these cellular therapy approaches being tried. And I've just had conversations with colleagues outside of our field. I mean, there is a big push to even go beyond cancer, right?
Oh, so absolutely.
For rheumatologic indications, for type 1 diabetes, there is a huge opportunity here to expand beyond just cancers in general. And how do we do it? I think that's where, LLS comes in too, right?
Yes, absolutely. So I think I worry that people will say, oh, good, now we can throw out all our other therapies. I don't think that's going to be the case. We do want therapies to be less toxic. And the idea that we can utilize our immune system in a way that hopefully is less toxic than many of the chemotherapies we've used in the past means we can use less chemotherapy. And that, holds a lot of promise for not only survival, but quality survival. And I think that for me is something we now have the luxury to study. And that I think is another very exciting point, that we're not just trying to keep someone alive for X number of years. We're looking at, can we keep them alive and healthy and functional? And that, that's very different. I think that's our future, and I'm very excited about it.
Yeah, I think that's a very important point you make, and this is where, I want to bring the myeloma analogy. When I was starting as a trainee, like you said, the outcomes for myeloma were poor. We didn't have options, less than 2 years of overall survival benefit. And now that benchmark has been raised over the last two decades. What we don't want is, we want more efficacious therapies, but at the same time, we want that safety, quality of life index to actually improve. So you don't want to lose that curve. You want to keep that curve, in fact, improve on it, but then really make sure that, the other aspects of living essentially
that you want to live.
Absolutely.
That you're not just alive, and that's really important. And I think that's another place where the blood cancers lead the way. So the places where we can experiment with eliminating therapies are the places where we have the real, the best survival. And Hodgkin's disease, for instance, is one of those where now, we're able to look at eliminating some of the therapies in the regimens that we have been using for decades. And substituting immunotherapies and other types of therapies. But you can only do that if you're continuing to cure the majority of patients. And so I think we'll learn a lot in doing that. And there have, again, another very exciting set of data in being able to eliminate some of the most toxic therapies in Hodgkin's disease regimens. I think, again, we're coming back to the same point, living well and with less long-term toxicity. I didn't imagine that's what I was going to be talking about, when I started out as an oncologist. It was just about trying to keep people alive. And this is a new era, and it's very exciting.
So true. Speaking of toxicity, it's been a very interesting year, 2025.
Yes.
So, it's certainly been very stressful for the research community in general, the cancer research community in specific, because we have made tremendous strides with. Both public-private funding partnerships over the years, and like you said, making early inroads, investments in what could potentially impact a broader group of diseases, and really improve outcomes for populations at large. And I just wanted to, ask your thoughts, how do you see this playing out? We have to continue to advocate for our patients and for making these advances.
Well, I think many people don't understand that, the long time period and the consistent funding that is required to come up with a novel therapeutic or a new treatment that will become a cure, and the role of academic research in making that happen. And I think that our our job really should be to educate people about how important that is, and that it's consistent funding, because it's little pieces and little steps and some missteps and then coming back. And, you know, we'll go back to CAR T. We first gave funding to CAR T cell research in 1999, our first grant proposal that we funded at LLS. Oh. And it wasn't approved until 2017. So we invested almost $40 million as a nonprofit in that one therapy. It was so worth it, you know, if you see where it's gone. And we were not the only ones who did that. Our federal government also provided funding. So did pharmaceutical companies. So did other nonprofits. It takes a village to make this happen. And if you stop and make it harder to get funding, or stop and start and stop and start, it's just going to take even longer. I don't want to talk about the policy, though. I mean, you know, is it appropriate to look at indirect costs and try and find waste or savings in our federal programs? Of course it is, but it needs to be done in a thoughtful way that doesn't, you know, number one, stop the research we need that's ongoing now. But number two, I'm worried where these decreased funds will hit. And it's likely to hit early career and early mid-career investigators. And it's already starting to hit graduate programs that are saying, well, sorry, we can't take you because we don't know what our funding situation is going to be. Between that and COVID, we're going to miss a whole generation of scientists. And frankly, you know, if I was looking to become a researcher now instead of, you know, 30 years ago, it's always hard to get grants. But now I think people will look at this and say, I'm not sure this is a career I want. And we'll lose our brain power to other countries. You know, the U.S. was the place where you came to do great research from all over the world. And I've heard people already say, well, I have a dual citizenship in Germany. I think I'll go there. Or, you know, people are leaving, and that brain drain is real.
No, I completely agree with you. I think, you know, you've hit all the very important points here. You know, we're talking about missing out on that competitive edge we have, where we have multicultural, talented teams working together in trying to find solutions. And I think if you look at, you know, just like the work that you quoted, you know, you know, LLS invested in cellular therapy, you know, CAR T research, you know, over 20 years ago, 25 years ago. And most of that funding is for novel ideas, with investigators who are in their early or mid career phase. And that is the most productive time for a researcher, where, you know, you are experimenting with cool ideas that may or may not come to fruition, but that's the time and if you're going to miss out on that will translate to this gap that's going to come 5 or 10 years from now, and we're going to fall behind. So I completely agree with you. I think that's why, you know, we need to continue to advocate. I do agree that, you know, maybe, you know, revisiting how we provide grants, especially to young and mid-career investigators, there might be, you know, a way to make that due process better, to make it more efficient, more transparent. But, you know, I think it has to be done thoughtfully.
It can't be done slash and burn. And that's the problem. As a nonprofit that funds, you know, millions of dollars of research each year, you know, we are doing everything we can to have more funding to try and you know, plug the holes in the dike. But the federal funding for research is so much greater than all of the nonprofits put together that it is very hard for us, and it's certainly not easy to turn on a dime and raise all that money to make up the difference. But I would put in a pitch that if you feel like this is wrong, by all means, LLS is going to fund early and mid-career investigators and keep funding research, and you can help us by donating.
No, thank you so much, for sharing that and for joining this podcast and sharing your thoughtful responses about what's happening in the field and what we need to continue to do, what's been a successful formula for us. And hope our audience enjoyed our dialogue, and until next time.
Thank you.